This is a Battle of Britain podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.
Phases of the Battle of Britain. As might be expected of a battle officially lasting 114 days, the Battle of Britain went through a number of distinct phases. As experience was gained, tactics refined, targets altered, and new equipment introduced, the nature of the conflict evolved. This podcast will discuss the main phases of the Battle of Britain. Although, for the RAF at least, the Battle of Britain formally started on the 10th of July 1940, the phase into which this date falls can be said to have begun before then. Phase 1, June to the 16th of July. Following the successful invasion of the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg and France in May and early June 1940, the German Air Force utilised much of the rest of June to draw breath and regain its strength. Losses were made good, new aerodromes occupied and units reorganised. This lull in activity lasted until mid-July and was characterised by relatively small-scale raids against towns, aerodromes, the aircraft industry and ports and shipping. Despite the low level of activity, the Luftwaffe still managed to secure a strategic victory, for on the 4th of July they launched devastating attacks on convoy OA-178 and on Portland Harbour, sinking four freighters and damaging nine others. As a direct result, the English Channel was closed to large merchant ships crossing the Atlantic. The Luftwaffe was instructed to be at full readiness by the 17th of July in order to begin operations preparing the way for the invasion of Britain. Their two main tasks were the strangulation of Britain through increased attacks on ports and shipping, and the destruction of the RAF as an effective fighting force. The early attempts to achieve these objectives mark the second phase of the battle. Phase 2, 17th of July to the 12th of August. From the 17th of July, the tempo and scale of the Luftwaffe's attacks grew. Coastal shipping in the Channel, RAF aerodromes and South Coast ports and naval bases were all regular daylight targets. By night, it was the towns and RAF stations of the Midlands, the West and the East Coast which suffered. Scotland also received regular attention from the Luftwaffe, as did Britain's coastal waters and estuaries in which they laid anti-shipping mines. The growing weight of the assault steadily wore down the RAF in the south and southeast, requiring several squadrons to be withdrawn because of pilot fatigue. However, fewer than a quarter of Fighter Command's formations had endured prolonged periods of action and fresh units were drafted in to replace those in need of rest. For their part, the Luftwaffe employed a variety of tactics, probing for flaws in the RAF's defences. Weaknesses were found, but they were recognised and rectified by Fighter Command before the Germans could exploit their discoveries. The seesaw nature of this phase of the battle is illustrated by the events of the 19th and 20th of July. The 19th saw the effective destruction of the RAF's 141 squadron, their outclassed Bolton Pool Defiance suffering a 78% loss rate in a single combat. Whereas the very next day the pendulum swung back the other way as the RAF gained their first significant victory of the battle, destroying eight enemy aircraft for the loss of just three fighters and two pilots, whilst successfully defending a Channel convoy. The intensity of operations waned in the second half of the phase as the British reduced the number of Channel convoys and the Luftwaffe prepared to launch an all-out assault on the RAF. The sting in the tail was a day of heavy raids, including attacks on the South Coast radar stations, intended to ease the passage of the huge bombing raids, which opened Phase 3. Phase 3, the 13th of August to the 6th of September. The Germans christened the 13th of August as Adlertag, meaning Eagle Day, as it signalled the start of Adlerangriff, or Attack of the Eagles. This was the codename for the Luftwaffe's concerted attempt to neutralise the RAF through the destruction of its infrastructure. In this aim, the Germans were to be continually hampered by the variable standard of their target intelligence. For example, none of the seven aerodromes attacked on Adlertag had any relevance to Fighter Command's ability to continue functioning. Similarly poor intelligence resulted in Luftwaffe units operating from Scandinavia meeting surprisingly stiff resistance over the northeast of England on the 15th. The Germans had believed they would face only weak opposition away from southern England, but their reception was such that they never again attempted large-scale daylight raids from Norway or from Denmark. In total, the Germans flew over 2,000 sorties on the 15th, losing more than 50 aircraft in the process, a casualty rate so high that the Luftwaffe called the 15th Black Thursday. They again lost more than 50 aircraft the very next day, and for a third time on the 18th, the last day of Stuka operations over the UK. So heavy was the destruction of this particular type. The Luftwaffe's Commander-in-Chief, Reichsmarschall Hermann Göring, was dismayed at the lack of progress, blaming insufficient aggression by the fighter forces. Ignoring the arguments for allowing the fighters greater tactical freedom, Göring dismissed several commanders, adjusted his fighter organisation, and instructed them to escort the bombers more closely. This was a critical error, hamstringing those who had caused the majority of the RAF's losses so far, the very purpose of the Luftwaffe's attacks. It is telling that whenever the Germans sent offensive fighter sweeps across the Channel, Fighter Command deliberately tried to avoid becoming embroiled in attritional fighter versus fighter combat. Britain's towns and industry continued to be targeted by night, and on the night of the 24th and 25th of August, London was bombed for the first time since 1918. The raid was not especially heavy, and for the most part the bombs were dropped randomly rather than on specific targets. As August turned to September, and aided by the first sustained period of fine weather since the battle began, the weight of German attacks and Fighter Command's losses surged to a climax which would nearly exhaust the defenders. Then, just as breaking point was reached, everything changed. Phase 4, 7th of September to the 2nd of October. Further aggravated by the continuing inability of his air force to defeat the RAF, Hermann Göring took personal control of the Luftwaffe's operations for the 7th of September. Deciding that the time was now right to deliver a hammer blow to the most important target in Britain, and goaded by Bomber Command's raids on German cities, Göring sent a colossal force of 965 aircraft to assault London by day, and followed this up with a further 318 bombers that night. So began a new phase of the battle, distinguished by the large-scale bombing of Britain's centres of population, particularly London, both by day and by night. More importantly, the events of the 7th of September probably also marked the end of Germany's opportunity to win the Battle of Britain. By transferring the focus of effort away from the military target of neutralising the RAF to the disruption of civilian and industrial life in Britain, Göring afforded Fighter Command a crucial respite during which the tired veterans could be rested, frontline squadrons rebuilt and reserves bolstered. A new threat led to new RAF tactics too, and where time allowed, fighter squadrons were to form up in pairs before engaging the massed enemy formations. It would not be long before Göring's daylight bombing campaign was also defeated, for on the 15th of September, massed ranks of RAF fighters dispersed two large consecutive daylight raids on London, claiming 185 German aircraft shot down. The fact that this figure, calculated and reported in good faith, was three times the Luftwaffe's actual losses was unimportant. The RAF had shown that it could beat back the German daylight bombing offensive, and by doing so forced a change in tactics upon the Luftwaffe. This outstanding strategic victory has resulted in the 15th of September being known as Battle of Britain Day ever since. Following the defeat of the 15th, the Germans used the daylight hours to launch nuisance raids, attack the aircraft industry, and try to entice the RAF into a debilitating contest between their fighter forces. At night, with the German bombers hidden beneath a protective cloak of darkness, the bombing of London continued uninterrupted. Indeed, London would be visited by the Luftwaffe on 57 consecutive nights between the 7th of September and the 2nd of November. Phase 5, the 3rd of October to the 31st of October. Another large shift in the Luftwaffe's preferred methods of attack resulted in a fifth phase of the Battle of Britain. The Luftwaffe modified Messerschmitt Bf 109 fighters to carry bombs, and within a fortnight they would have more than 200 of such aircraft. Still able to fly at nearly 30,000 feet, they could operate beyond the effective reach of the Hurricane, which still made up the majority of Fighter Command's available aircraft. These Jarbos, as they were known to the Germans, quickly became the main weapon employed by the Luftwaffe during daylight hours. Somewhat presciently, the RAF had created two special spotter flights, which flew constant high-altitude patrols over Kent and Sussex to help distinguish large-scale fighter and fighter-bomber sweeps from bombing raids, something which was not possible using radar or observer corps stations. The Jarbos caused the RAF serious problems. As well as being able to operate above the RAF's Hurricanes, The top cover BF-109 fighters were effectively unshackled from escort duty, and the battle became a fighter versus fighter contest, a return to the situation which had nearly exhausted fighter command in late August and early September. These factors combined to allow the Luftwaffe to approach gaining local air superiority over the southeast of England. However, fighter command was daily gaining in strength and was able to resist. It was not until the hours of darkness, where it was still essentially safe from interception, that the Luftwaffe's main bombing raids were launched. As a stopgap measure, 73 Squadron was ordered to employ its Hurricanes as night fighters, but this was not a success. Simultaneously, the RAF was expediting the introduction of more effective night fighter aircraft and radar equipment. The heavy nocturnal attacks of this period were the beginning of what came to be called the Blitz. A sustained heavy bombing campaign against Britain's population centres and their citizens and industry, this campaign would continue until May 1941. Symbolically enough, the last official day of the Battle of Britain, the 31st of October 1940, saw the least combat activity for 4 months, and not a single aircraft, German or British, was lost in combat.
That was a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum's Battle of Britain series. If you would like to learn more about the history of the Battle of Britain, why not visit the museum's Battle of Britain Hall in London, which houses the world's most comprehensive collection of aircraft that fought in the battle. The hall is open daily from 12 noon to 6 p.m.